The Utah legislature has completed their 45-day session and addressed a lot of significant issues affecting Utah residents. Senate President Wayne Niederhauser says what they've accomplished isn't perfect because state lawmakers come representing a spectrum of views and agendas from across the state.
And we try to work out all those needs across the state, and sometimes we don't come up with the purest type of policy because everybody has an interest in it, and you have to get 38 votes in the House and 15 votes in the Senate, and the governor has to agree with you at the end of the day.
Today on the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour, a review of this past state legislative session with a panel discussion including Senate President Wayne Niederhauser, Speaker of the House Greg Hughes, and Democratic Representatives Brian King and Patrice Arendt. That's coming up, but first, this news. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss. Well, after 45 days, the 2017 Utah legislative session ended last week, and our state elected officials took on a lot of issues, including homelessness, air quality, funding for education and rape kits, and reforms for Utah alcohol laws. A lot of it was contentious, and we're all now beginning to understand what changes were made and how they will affect life in the Beehive State going forward. At the end of last week, state lawmakers convened at the Hinckley Institute of Politics on the campus of the University of Utah to review this past session and talk about some of the highlights. And today we're going to air as much of that discussion as we can fit into the hour. On the panel, we had two Democrats, Democratic Representative Brian King and Democratic Representative Patrice Arendt, both representing parts of Salt Lake City. And we had two Republicans in leadership, Republican Speaker of the House Greg Hughes and Senate President Wayne Niederhauser. And the conversation was moderated by lobbyist and political consultant Frank Pignanelli.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. I'm also an adjunct professor, which is probably the only credential that gets me to stand before you. We want to thank the members of the panel. There was a lot of discussion during the legislative session about diminished capacity. I assure you, these three people, along with me, are operating in diminished capacity after 45 incredible days. With us, beginning with Brian King, he's a minority leader of the Utah House of Representatives. He doesn't claim this, but I will state it. He and I were debate partners at Conwood High School years ago. We have the Speaker of the House, Greg Hughes, who has done a fabulous job of leading his body. Plus, as you know, he's the one person out of 300 million that predicted the election of Donald Trump. And I was with him at that lunch on Election Day. He called it down to the county in Pennsylvania.
We had lunch. I didn't know it was going to happen, but that was the
you
only path
called it
I
to
could
the
see.
County.
Yeah.
And then a longtime friend, Representative Patrice Arendt, who served in the House, the Senate, who's back in the House again, and is noted for a number of accomplishments, including clean air. So let's get right to it. Panel, before we get to the questions, we want to thank them for their hard work, but thank them for even showing up today. Let's start with you, Brian. Highlights and some things you want to talk about the session.
Well, I think that one of the highlights, there are a lot of highlights, but I want to start with homelessness. We work hard to really do some good things with the homelessness issue across the state, but particularly here in Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County. And I have talked to a lot of people about this, and I never hesitate to give the speaker a lot of credit because this is a tough issue to deal with. It's a sort of an intransigent issue in the sense that you can't just make homelessness go away by any one particular program. It's always going to be with us to some degree or another. It's primarily a Salt Lake City, certainly primarily a Salt Lake County issue, and yet the speaker has, in his role as speaker of the entire state house, allocated and put his energy into focusing a lot of resources for the state of Utah into that, and I appreciate that. I personally think it's going a little too far, actually, to come dressed as a homeless guy. But you know, he's into it.
He's into it. He's adopted the role.
I have.
No, seriously, we put some more money. Last session we put money into it, again at the speaker's initiative, but we put more money into it this year. And I know from personal experience and personal conversations that he and I had, how much time and energy he put into brokering negotiations between the county and the city. These were not easy things. These were difficult things, and he put a lot of his intellectual capital and time into it and emotion into it, and it was a hard thing. But we're much better as a state and a legislature because of his efforts. So
you're going to ruin our street cred if you keep being nice. I mean, we're supposed to fight, you know. So,
Mr. Speaker.
Well, I want to tell you that we've worked together well. I think that those, how many were interns in this session? Let's see.
That's why we,
this is the whole intern. This is a requirement. You're getting credit for this, huh? Okay. I thought you just wanted to see us. No. I thought this was just a big old get to see you moment. How many of you were surprised? Can't have my Red Bull. How many of you were surprised at the supermajority of votes that occur in our House and our Senate? How many votes go by more than two-thirds, almost all the time? Hard-working lawmakers, the way we put the budget together, you see us come together. And I think that the media, it's their job to report, and there are clashes, and there are times where we differ in public policy. And you'll see that erupt sometimes on the floor, Brian. But for the most part, and I'd say almost 90%+ of the time, you're seeing us all as public servants coming together and working hard together, getting big things accomplished. And homelessness was one of those big issues. It's a state issue, though. These people aren't just living blocks away from the shelter, downtown shelter. They're coming from all over. And I think that what I saw and what I've spent some time down there, it was important to create the narrative. We started this last year, but this is a state issue. And so we had Representative Francis Gibson from Mapleton in Utah County. He was the bill sponsor of the initiative. We had Cowboy Mike Noel looking for jail beds around the county so that we can start arresting people that are selling drugs and preying upon the vulnerable. We had a lot of our lawmakers that are not in Salt Lake City or Salt Lake County who worked very hard on this issue. And even with the Senate, I mean, there is so much in dollars of this state budget that we committed to the homelessness issue. That means that there are priorities that we aren't able to fund because we balance a budget. And the cooperation with the Senate and the governor in terms of the amount that we were able to allocate in the budget for this issue, it was a mighty amount, and it takes that kind of cooperation. So that was probably one of the biggest things we did, amongst other things, public education, its funding. Tax reform, the way we stared at it, we didn't get a big measure done, but we worked very hard and learned a lot of important things. So those are kind of the big issues as I see them.
I think the collective group here probably knows more about what happened than some of us who didn't get a lot of sleep. But it's interesting, as I made my list coming in, what did I say? Homelessness. I was in the Public Utilities Committee that heard that bill. It's exactly where you expect that bill to be heard. But it's an important issue, and I think all of us feel so strongly that we do more in that area. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. I was able to spend a lot of time on air quality issues again this session, and I felt very good about where we ended up at the end of the session. We'd requested funding for air quality monitors. We received all that funding. We requested funding for research. We received most of that funding. We also received funding for a lot of other projects, including a new UTA depot where we can have a lot of cleaner fuel buses. And a variety of other good bills that passed, including a task force that's going to be looking at this in the future so that we'll have really good legislation coming forth in future years. I also wanted to talk about a few other things that happened. We took a first step towards medical marijuana, maybe a second step to try and make sure we have the information we need there. We funded testing the sexual abuse, the rape kits. That was very important. The outdoor recreation tourism, that to me was something very important. I started working on the outdoor rec bill last year that we passed. We know that we have so many people using our outdoor facilities. They are being loved to death, but we don't have the bridges, the roads, the porta potties, all of those things we need. And last year we got $1 million to really work on that, but it wasn't a long-term funding source. So this year we were able to do that, and I felt very good about that. The helmet law, maybe apply to a few of those. Those of you here, and maybe a few of you won't be organ donors as a result of it. So I was really happy that we were able to take a step there.
I didn't like that bill.
You didn't like that bill.
I have a rant about that, by the way. Okay, ask that question, Frank.
We will have a rant. A lot of changes in the alcohol laws. Not all of them I agree with, but we made some progress in terms of providing some options for our restaurants, and I felt good about that.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome, President Niederhauser. Thank you for taking time out to join us. We're just going down the row here. Highlights of the session before we get into some questions.
Okay. Sorry about being late. I was
saw on my schedule, the Hinckley Institute, I know where that's at. And the building's not there anymore. Oh, I guess I don't know where it's at. So I've been trying to find this place for the last 15 minutes, so I apologize. I think it's probably already been stated, and I don't want to restate things, that this is probably one of the best sessions, at least that I've been involved in. I thought it was smooth. I thought we worked well with the Senate, worked well with the House, and when we're gelling together, we can get a lot of things done. We took on an effort to try and reform our tax system. And I'm a broken record, and I was kidded about it last night by the interns. I see a few of you out there this morning. That I keep preaching that we are going to have a doubling of the population over the next 30 years. And what does that look like? Think about that. Twice as many people on the Wasatch Front in St. George area, up in Cache Valley and other parts. Think about it. What does that feel like? What does that look like? And we need to start addressing the issues now of our growth. And so I say the three biggest issues that we deal with in real estate, the three things that you look at is location, location, location. Well, the three biggest issues that face our state are infrastructure, infrastructure, and infrastructure. And it's been mentioned about the outdoor grants. That's going to help us with our recreational assets that are loved to death, as mentioned, and so I was already supportive of that. We got a bonding bill passed that will create, that will put another $1 billion into our road systems over the next 4 years. But building roads, we can't build enough roads to cover that population increase. It's going to take transit. And transit's going to be a big part of that going forward. And it's our educational assets. This university, the universities across the state, our public education system, we're going to need to invest in that. And I felt like we did a pretty good job with that this year based on the revenue. We put in 4% WPU for public education. And so for the last several years, we've invested heavily in our public education system, and we need to, because our school districts are having a hard time attracting teachers into the profession, and that's an indication that the pay may be too low to attract people into that profession and to stay in that profession. And so that has to be addressed going forward. And we raised the question this session whether our tax structure and the revenue streams that we have right now are sufficient to meet that demand, to be able to invest now and incrementally over the next decade and couple of decades to meet the growing demands of our population. And I'm here to say that our structure isn't sufficient to do that. And we're going to have to make some tough decisions in the next little while. Our fiscal analyst showed us this year that we're going to make some crossroads here in the next 5 to 10 years in our budgeting, where the legislature is going to be forced to make some hard decisions. And my position is, why do we want to force it on some big and crisis decisions on a legislature in the future when we can take some incremental steps now to help solve that problem? So I felt like we did a pretty good job there, but we've got a lot of work to do in our tax structure and the revenue streams, and to be careful that we're not hurting families and people along the way. We're going to have to be smart about that tax structure.
And thanks for tuning in to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. Today we are airing a discussion recorded at the end of last week with a panel of Utah State legislators to review this year's session and discuss the bills that passed or didn't pass and what it all means for the state going forward. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. On this program, as you know, we record and broadcast the many engaging lectures, debates, and panel discussions held at the Hinckley Institute of Politics at the University of Utah, and we replay them, unedited, in their entirety as a public service. And today we are airing a legislative wrap-up discussion recorded last Friday, March 10th, at the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The panelists included Representative Brian King and Representative Patrice Arendt, and Republican Speaker of the House Greg Hughes and Senate President Wayne Niederhauser. And the conversation was moderated by lobbyist and political consultant Frank Pignanelli.
A lot of times there's always kind of, for at least for several days, towards the end, there's logjams between the Senate and the House, and the budget is delayed. We didn't see that. In fact, I would say that the end of the session was much like a buffet at Grand America. It's impossible to find something you didn't like, what happened. But this is a political event here, and I do want to have some of you opine about, you did put a lot of money into public education and higher education, but what does that do for our schools now? I understand that they're still talking about income tax increase, but now they're maybe talking about a sales tax increase, also to increase monies for education. Will they have traction because of all the work you did, or is there still something left, or do they take off where you left off on putting the sales tax off of food? What do you project in all that? Brian?
Well, I mean, you know, our schools now is going to do what our schools now does. I mean, I think they'll look at what we did, and in some ways they'll be they'll feel that they're the juggernaut that otherwise might exist has been undermined a little bit because we have funded, as the president said, we went to 4% on the WPU increase. That was a significant increase. But we also funded all the growth that was necessary to fund over the past year. And then we put on top of like $200 million or something. I mean, we put a lot of money into public ed this year. And the Our Schools Now folks are going to then go from there and say, well, we want to put on the ballot this initiative to raise the income tax. And we don't know if that's what they're going to end up with presenting in terms of the initiative proposal. But I'm very ambivalent about the Our Schools Now proposal, because what I do think, and we've talked about this as Democrats for years, is the need to put greater resources into public education. And we're starting to do it some, but we've got such a big hole to dig our way out of that I would like to see a strong statement from the people of the state of Utah to back up some of the polling that we've seen that suggests that people are frustrated at the degree to which we as lawmakers aren't willing to commit the resources that are necessary and that the people of the state of Utah want. But lawmakers are, by nature, especially our lawmakers at the Utah State Legislature, are more averse to raising taxes than I think the average Utah, and so it's hard to get them to that point. If you have Our Schools Now do an initiative that gets the thumbs up, great. But what if Our Schools Now runs an initiative that goes down? That's from my perspective as a Democrat, sort of a worst case scenario, because the message that it sends, not so much to Representative Arendt and I, because we're Democrats and we're pretty doggone willing to say, let's put more money into public ed. But I don't mean this as a bad. I mean,
yes, you do.
No, I don't. The Speaker and the President are in a tough situation selling to their caucuses up there any significant increase in public ed funding if in the 2019 session you have seen Our Schools Now initiative go down the tubes. 3 months before, 2 months before. So, I mean, from my perspective, Our Schools Now represents a bit of a calculated risk that could be great, or it could create more problems than we currently have.
Mr. Speaker, President, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I'll just say, if you were interning last year, I don't think you would see a less emphasis on public education in terms of our budget, our attention to the budget. In the House, 75 districts, when our colleagues are sending out their surveys that you were probably collecting and looking at the data and what's the top issue, I would argue that most of our districts are saying public education is the number one issue. It's got to be in the top one or two. I think we always pay attention to it, but the outside baseball with this Our Schools Now made it more of an issue in terms of this proposal to raise taxes. I think it's a bad idea, and I think that one of the reasons why we're looking at the structure of our taxes and how we collect them is our economy is changing, and you have kind of three legs of tax collection in the state of Utah. You have an income tax, and that is the longest leg. That is where we're collecting the most amount of money. The medium-sized leg is our general fund or our sales tax, and it is not as long, and it doesn't collect as much as the income tax does. And then you have your transportation tax, your gas tax, which is the shortest leg. If you decide to have a referendum and raise income tax, which is already your longest leg, the problem is it's a bad idea because you're going to still have this formula where you're seeing the dollars siphon from the income tax over to the general fund to fund our schools, our institutions of higher learning more than possible. And then you're seeing general fund money used for transportation because the gas tax doesn't pay for new roads and maintenance of roads like it used to. It was in the 90s, the gas tax could take care of our roads and our growth. It doesn't come close to doing that anymore. If you don't start changing that structural balance, it does not matter. And so we've talked about why we are more interested in doing the reform is we've got to insulate this state from bad ideas and proposals to the public that will sound good or maybe feel good, but will not have the desired outcome. And I think the way you get there is you've got to get those legs looking closer in terms of their length and the way we collect the revenue in the state. So not necessarily an increase, but looking. And we looked at that with the gas tax. We made some adjustments on data. We're going to an index instead of a cent per gallon that stays the same every year. We worked on that to make that, use the data now to make that revenue start to grow. And so there's some work we did on that front, but we're not going to be a reactive bunch to the prospect that there's an initiative that might come. But it does worry us that initiatives like that could get traction when we don't think it's going to do what will be advertised.
Mr. President, I know that you worked, in addition to what Speaker Hughes said, you worked on early on, but also throughout the session, some changes to the tax code dealing with business and broadening it out. Maybe real quickly talk about, I know they didn't pan out, but I know that's on the agenda for the future.
Well, tax reform back in 2005 to 2007 took a couple of years. I was the sponsor of the bill that in 2007 lowered the income tax rate from 6.9% to 5% and flattened that, made it a single rate, made it a little bit flatter, but we kept deductions for personal exemptions, for charitable contributions, mortgage interest, and those types of things, which when you inject deductions or exemptions to your revenue stream, whether it's sales tax, whether it's income tax, you start to create volatility in that revenue stream. And remember, what we're trying to do is fund government here. And government can't be funded like this, ups and downs with the economy. Government has a constant need. You take a public education system, they can't deal with a cash flow like this. It has to be predictable. It has to be, and in our state, it has to be growing because we have a lot of children here. And that's a big challenge for us. It's good that we have a young, vibrant population because it attracts business because they'll know that we have a strong workforce for many years to come, but challenges is now educating that workforce and aligning them with the workforce needs of this century and the decades to come. So that's our challenge. And what we need to do, good tax revenue policy without politics and without other considerations is broad-based. Put as much as you can in the base and keep the rates low. And that's why we talked about the sales tax back into food, that we never took it all out, but we were going to restore it back to this to the level of all other sales tax items. Now, in pure revenue policy, that's the right policy because when we have a downturn in the economy, people aren't buying furniture, they're not buying cars, but guess what they're buying? Food. And that stays constant. And so it stabilizes that revenue stream. It matches the need that we have for a constant revenue stream for the programs that we're funding. And it's impossible to give a straight line, especially when you're dealing with an income tax or a sales tax. And that's why we have rainy day funds. But the more we can flatten that out, the better off we're going to be. But then politics and other items enter into that equation. So we never get to pure revenue policy that is economically sound, because we have to consider the indigent and those who maybe are struggling to buy food. And now we're going to put the sales tax back on that food? That, you know, can cause some angst. And politics then enter into that. And so that's why our tax structure sometimes isn't the best revenue policy, because we're trying to deal with other policies that are important also. But I have to throw out here that, and this is not easy. It's going to take some major, these are major political decisions for a political body. A legislature is a political body. And there are 104 of us, 29 in the Senate and 75 in the House. And we come from all over the state. And, you know, we have Democrats and Republicans, but Representative Arendt here, she represents a constituency that's a lot different than Senator Okerlund in central Utah represents. And he's elected by them based on their values and what their wants and needs are. And Representative Arendt is elected by her constituency. And we match pretty close to our constituency. And so you have a spectrum of ideas on what should happen. And we bring that all together during the legislative session. And we try to work out all those needs across the state. And sometimes we don't come up with the purest type of policy, because everybody has an interest in it. And you have to get 38 votes in the House and 15 votes in the Senate, and the governor has to agree with you at the end of the day. So that's why we address a lot of issues that you may not appreciate and think that we're wasting our time on. But somebody in St. George or Logan or in Provo, they think otherwise. And they think that's an idea that we ought to discuss. And the legislative session is where we mix that all up and come up with something at the end of the day. And I think we do a really good job. But and it's so difficult for us to raise taxes, so to speak, even for the basic needs of education and so forth, because our constituents are also weighing in, who we represent, who don't want us to take any more money out of their pocket. They want to keep that there. And so there's this balance that's created, and a lot of different ideas. So that's what we have to tackle now over the next couple of years. We know we have a problem. We know we have an infrastructure problem. We may have the amount of revenue problem as we go forward to meet those infrastructure needs. And how are we going to do it? Is it sales tax? Is it income tax? Personally, I think income tax is the wrong place to do it. Income tax is a tax on productivity. And when you tax something more, you get less of it. When you tax something less, you get more of it. And so the last place we should be looking to raise the rate is in the income tax. Now, our schools now, I think, are looking actually at the sales tax potentially. We don't know what their initiative will be, but that's not driving what we're doing. We can see that we have a problem, and we've got to address that here in the next few years.
Thank you.
Sorry about the long.
No, it's an important issue, it really is, and it was heartwarming to see the amount of work and that went into that, trying to figure out how, long range, how does the state grapple with that, the three-legged stool and things like that. So I'm glad that's something you will be dealing with in your future. Representative Arendt, anything you wanted to add?
Well, I was glad to see that the discussion started on tax reform. I was a little concerned when I heard the proposal was going to be aired the first time in a hearing 2 days before the session ended, because I want the public input. I think this is complicated, as we've heard. There's a lot we need to look at. I do think that our schools now has a role, and I think they've already at least pushed some of my colleagues to try and look at what we're going to be doing in terms of public education. I serve on the Public Education Appropriations Committee. But I was concerned about the things that we're just not funding now. I look at the people who aren't going into education, for example, or the teachers that are leaving. And we, in fact, have a good proven program, a peer assistance program, that's really working well in the Salt Lake School District, and we didn't fund a dime of that this year. So there are so many needs in that area that we really need to look at. We're in a crisis in teaching. I'm very pleased that we, at least at this point, no one's talking about, at least we didn't have any bills to take the sales tax on and put it back on food, because I just think that's such a bad idea. I looked at a map over the weekend, and what states in the West are taxing food? And Idaho's got a little bit different plan, but we're not in a place where everybody's taxing food, and there's a good reason for that. So this is a big picture issue. We certainly need to be looking at it, but I know it's going to take a while, but our schools now is going to have to move ahead and make some decisions, and I'll be really interested to see what they can come up with. I hope it's a reasonable plan the public can support.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be back in a moment. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. Today we're airing a legislative wrap-up discussion held recently at the Hinckley Institute of Politics. Lawmakers met to discuss their legislation and highlights from this past 45-day session. The panel included Democrats Representative Brian King and Representative Patrice Arendt, and Republican Speaker of the House Greg Hughes and Republican Senate President Wayne Niederhauser. The conversation was moderated by lobbyist Frank Pignanelli, and towards the middle of the hour, the group took questions from the audience.
My question is for the speaker. If we're proposing a incremental increase in a sales tax on food, would the state consider instituting another incremental increase in public assistance programs like WIC or food stamps, or creating another program to assist with that?
Yeah, it's a great question, and that's one of the things we stared at. We were getting late in the session because we did want to mitigate the impact to the poor. So we looked at some best practices or just the ways other states had handled it. Idaho had a grocery tax credit that was refundable. It didn't just go against what income you would make. You could actually, per household member, fill out your income tax and get a credit that we believed would overcome the additional percentage of the income tax. And so we looked at that. We looked at an earned income tax credit for members of intergenerational poverty. And so that was going to be, if we were going to consider restoring the tax on food, companion pieces to that legislation would have also included those kinds of grocery tax credits or the earned income tax credit. And but at the end of the day, the modeling, it just wasn't ready. And it didn't really address the volatility as we modeled that out to the degree that we wanted it to. And so I joked, only half-heartedly joked, because I was so disappointed. Usually you have good policy, and it's hard to develop the political will to get it passed. We were the opposite. We had the political will to get something done.
We did.
And I can overcome politics, and I can overcome policy concerns. I can't overcome math, okay? And when I saw it roll out, it just didn't do what we needed to do. Yeah. And so we had this great plan, I thought, but it wasn't going to address that volatility the way that the president described. And so at that point, you can't get emotionally attached to your effort that you do it, so we didn't do it. But we learned a lot. And our caucus and our legislature, I think, learned a lot about the issues we have and why it's important to tackle them now versus later when you're in the event of a structural imbalance. And we learned a lot through that process. But absolutely, you're going to have to see, when you look at this, you're going to have to look at the winners and losers. And that's what always happens when you're messing around with the revenue and tax policy. And how are you going to deal with the winners and losers? And who are those winners? Who are those losers? And what does that really mean? There's a lot that goes into it.
Is there anything the rest of the panel wants to add to that?
The only thing I'd say that, not the only thing that I disagree with the speaker about, but one thing that I disagree with the speaker about that he said is that, you know, our problem is that we know what we think and the facts don't justify it. That happens a lot more often in my mind, at least, because they legislate what he thinks.
Thank you.
He would think that way.
Another question.
So along with the what the last question was about, do you think adding like an extra tax to like fast food on top of what was already proposed?
You're asking if there was a special tax on fast food?
Yeah.
So a special tax on, okay.
Anyone or other, other sin tax.
Other sin. I mean, this is, yeah, they raised it on alcohol. So, let's.
We could do soda. We could do.
Oh, you can. I mean, in a lot of places have done that. You talk about soda. You talk about sugar. You talk about fast food. Those are things that in the state legislature here in Utah particularly, I think we're a little bit reluctant to handle because there's a heavy element of nanny statism on that kind of stuff. We already have an overlay of that to some extent, as Frank's alluding to, on quote, sin, unquote, taxes here in this state that has such a long history of having a predominant religion that sort of views particularly tobacco and alcohol in sort of pejorative terms. And so, I mean, you can play that either way. I mean, some people up the legislature, quite honestly, want to fuse church and state. I mean, they really do. You probably wouldn't get them to say that explicitly, but in their heart of hearts and in their minds, that's how they feel. And you see it reflected in their policies. Most, I don't think legislators feel that way. Most of them want to maintain a separation, but some bend over backwards to maintain a separation. So this whole idea about how you deal with things that are undesirable for health reasons, for example, I think there's a suspicion of that that runs pretty deep among the legislators up at the Utah State Legislature. And I think Utah, this is just my personal opinion, the kind of stuff you're talking about, Utah would be in the background. We would be in the rear of the parade of states and cities to adopt that kind of thing.
I think if we're going to be looking at tax reform, a lot of things have to be on the table. We're going to have to be looking at whether it's that, whether it's soda, whether it's other big picture items. I think it's as we've heard, it's a multi-year process to figure that out and to figure out how would you even define, there are different ways to define fast food. What is that? Does it require a drive? I mean, there's all kinds of different things we're going to have to look at, and that's just one small piece of the puzzle.
And a technical note, the prepared food already has the full tax. The tax that we removed in 2007 is on unprepared food. So you can go into a 7-Eleven and pay the full ride on the sales tax on a lot of things that you'd buy by way of food in 7-Eleven. But it's the unprepared food that amount is lower. And here's the other reality as we learned through our modeling. Food, when you look at it, will reduce volatility because we always need food and we always buy food in good times and bad times. But it doesn't represent as large of a percentage of the general sales tax we collect. So you can solve the volatility there, but you might not be answering your questions by way of the macro and the bigger dollars because it doesn't represent as big of a portion of our sales tax collection. And I learned that through this process, that it was surprising to me.
What is it, about 10%?
Yeah, it's 10 to 11%.
11%. But also, just to direct to that question, it's not good tax policy. Now, it may be political policy, and there may be some other reasons to do it, but if it's a revenue policy, it's not good revenue policy because it's so narrow. And broad-based, low rates, that's what is good revenue policy. Now, inject trying to steer people away from that, that's more of a political issue, and that's the things that we debate. But as a pure revenue policy, that's not the solution.
And when he's talking about a broad base, I think we're also looking at where's the money going off the top. For example, we have a lot of earmarks, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of earmarks. And those are all off the top before we even start to do our budgeting. So I think we need to be always reexamining those because we may have given away one or an incentive maybe a few years ago. And it may have been something that really made sense. It brought more money into the state. But then we want to look at that again and say, does that make sense today? And even if we were trying to help that industry, is it the best way to do it? Is it the thing to do to compete with other states today? Maybe, maybe not. So we're always having to look at those. We disagree on some of them. We did a bill a few years ago that said 30% of the increase in our sales tax was all going to go into one place, into roads. Some of us thought maybe more of that ought to be going other places. It's always a debate.
Yes.
Right. So I actually have a question for those who are listening on the radio. I know one of the big public issues that has been asked about a lot is HB 442 and how that's working, how it's going to affect businesses. Maybe you guys could take us through that a little bit.
Which is HB 442 is?
It's alcohol.
I think it's the Zion Moat.
Yeah, let me lay down on that one, then everyone's welcome to disagree with me on this one, including maybe members of the panel. I think we have stared at the there has been a parlor trick in this session, and that is everyone's talking about Zion curtains and moats, okay? I'm going to tell you, it's just courteous to the people sitting at the bar that you don't put the kids right up against it with the kids' menus and the crayons, okay? I'm just telling you, I don't know how we got to a place where we think we got to get these kids as close to that bar structure as humanly possible, or else we're doing it wrong. While we're talking about that, we just lowered the DUI rate to 0.05. Let me tell you, if you're in the business of selling an adult beverage, or if you're interested in purchasing adult beverages at 0.05, I don't know that we're doing this anymore. Put the kids at the bar at that point, okay? Because that transaction I don't think is going on unless you can walk to the bar or get an Uber. And we're talking suburban, you know, restaurants and clubs. I think the president knows because he's heard my rant about this. I'm going to tell you, I can't believe we passed that bill. I cannot believe we did it. It blows my mind. And here's the issue, young people. You're going to have to be very careful. Because now that it's at 0.05, and we are the only state now at that level, you could get on your phone in a car, and you're going to be more impaired than at that level. If you get a DUI at 0.05, you will no longer be eligible for the standard auto insurance rate. You're going to pay a fortune for that auto insurance. And it's going to be on your driver's record for a decade. Okay? Now, what's going to happen, and that if you have a family, that's going to impact the insurance of those within your household that drive. What happens when you're in that now secondary market, and we know that there's going to be more arrests because there's a fiscal note that says as much, that when you push it down to 05, you're going to arrest a lot more people and give a lot more people DUIs. When you do that and you see that the cost for auto insurance goes through the roof, it is my belief that you're going to see more uninsured motorists driving the roads. And I don't know how we think that that's addressing public safety in any way. And that's just one area of unintended consequences that you get into with a 0.05. So we can keep talking about Zion curtains and moats, and we can do it all day. The real issue that came through there, and did you hear that bill lobbied at all? I have more insurance agents and people talk to me after the bill became law, talking about its ramifications, than I ever heard as that bill was stumbling its way, pun intended, through this process, okay? I never saw the robust debate on that bill that I think it deserved.
So
and
how did you vote on that?
I voted absolutely no. I was a no on that vote. But I was one of 26 in the House. And
what was the vote in the Senate?
We had, we actually had 20 votes, but for some political reasons, 3 peeled off. Who were going to vote for it, and then when it passed, they were changed to no.
Okay.
17 was the
17,
count.
Yes.
As the only person on this panel that actually imbibes in adult beverages, I'd like to make a couple of comments.
First of all, were you a yes or no?
On either of those bills?
No, on the 0.05.
No.
I was a no.
Okay.
I was a yes.
Okay. I want to first talk about 442, though, the Zion Curtain bill. One of the things I asked for on the floor, and I've been asking for this for years, and it's more than a Zion curtain, is somebody give me some data. Somebody give me some evidence that having a child see me drink is any different than having them see them mix the drinks. If my child could come and sit with me at the table and see those beautiful pictures of the drinks, see me order a drink, have the drink come to the table, and then watch me drink it, how is that having any negative impact? I am still waiting for that data. I just don't get it. In fact, the way I trained my children is be careful. Make sure you can see what people put in your drinks when you go to parties, because somebody might slip something bad in a drink. So it makes the whole concept, and then this idea that we're going to legislate being courteous and not having crayons and young kids at the bar. If that's something that a restaurant owner thinks is makes sense for their people, let us not tell them what to do. This is real nanny state. We're telling you that we don't want kids with crayons at the bar. The whole concept just doesn't make sense to me. The moat, the curtain, any of that. Now, the other thing that I'm hearing about with respect to the .05, I occasionally get calls from people who are thinking of either moving their businesses to Utah or they're thinking about bringing conventions here. And now they're saying, oh, Utah, .05, driving outdoor retailers out. Are we really even welcome there? What's going on? And I've received a dozen of those calls in just the last few days. So I'm concerned about the impact on tourism. I'll stop ranting and raving now.
Let me just say this real quick. So Pittsburgh, where I grew up, they call it a drinking town with a football problem, okay? So they have an area that's a bar area and a restaurant. So let's not think that Utah is this lone area where if you have a bar inside your restaurant, there is some buffer where adults are going to congregate, have drinks, have conversation, absent children right up against that area. So I just don't see that as the deal killer that everybody's made it. But anyway, I think that here's the data you need to know. Politics is the art of the deal. I hope when you were interning, you saw how bills are made. I hope you saw that there are concerns that are brought up. I hope you saw that you have to find perfect can't be the enemy of good. It's just math. You need 38 in the House, 15 in the Senate, and you got to get there. The data is this. There's people that would like prohibition, and they just like to eliminate the practice of drinking entirely. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to find that common ground that you can get stakeholders around and agree to. And I can't give you one reason why you would hide dispensing or storage when you can put the glossy pictures of the drinks right on the table, and legally, because it's a freedom of speech issue, you can't regulate that. I can't give you any data, but what I can tell you is that there's people that would like to not have liquor licenses at all. And they'd like to just take that out of the state entirely, and you've got to battle against that. You've got to make sure that that's not the case.
Those are the fusionists.
So I'm just saying, the data is that we have a lot of different motivations going on in there. And we've got to find that place where, you know, we can get the votes and we can move good policy forward.
President, anything you want to add to this?
Well, I'm of the opinion that a restaurant should be a restaurant and a bar should be a bar. And for a long time, we haven't want children to be in bars. You have to be 21 to go into a bar. And then we put bars in restaurants. And that's been a difficult. I think that's a problem. I think there is some influence on children. Now, I don't think it's any worse than seeing the drinks on the menu on there, but there should be some less exposure. Alcohol is a problem. You've got the Prime Minister of England calling out to his population to stop binge drinking because it's creating all kinds of workforce problems there. Alcohol is a problem. It's when it's abused, and it's abused quite often. That's the facts. You can't argue with those facts. And the National Transportation Safety Board, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have voted for this .05. They have all the data. Two-thirds of the world already have .05 as their designation of where you cannot be, where you'll be a DUI. Canada, all of Europe, and most of Latin America. United States is a stark, it stands out on the map of the world as one of the only countries in the world that have a high DUI rate. And the data is, it's a fact, and you can go to the Transportation Safety Board, they have the data, they've done the research. When you go to .05, people think twice about going out on the roads, and it saves lives. It's not about religion. It's only about saving lives. And that's why I voted for it.
And I just want to add, I think the president makes some very good points. I was incredibly ambivalent about that DUI bill, that .05 bill, incredibly. Because if you're really concerned about public safety, the data speaks pretty loudly. And you said NHTSA. It was NHTSA for me. I was surprised when NHTSA came out and aggressively and strongly said, we need to move to .05. I'm like, seriously? But you know, I had a lot of confidence in that. And the speaker and I were just having a little sidebar here. There's a difference. One of the things that is a difference between the United States and Europe is people in Europe don't drive like they drive in the United States. And people in Europe have access to neighborhood bars where they can walk to and from a location where they drink to the point that they shouldn't be driving, and they can do it more safely and get home and get to the bar. So there are a lot of, it's not just, you know, you can't just say because they do it in Europe that we should do it in the United States necessarily right across the board. So I think it's a very tough issue.
Yeah, okay.
I was just going to say, we've made it hard in Utah to have some of the neighborhood bars just because a bar can't be so close to a church, and we have churches everywhere and can't have them there parked. And so it's harder.
I love that. That's true.
And also, we've taken away some of the discretion from our Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission to have some variances there. So it does make it a little more
difficult. Yeah, but we have Uber. We have Lyft. We have all kinds of technology. When you drink, you should not drive.
I want to be able to walk.
That is the fact. And hopefully now that this will be the law, and my prediction is, you watch, over the next 5 to 10 years, most states are going to go to .05 because the data shows it saves lives. And think twice about driving when you're consuming alcohol because you're putting other people at risk.
I got to take off.
Representative Keynes,
about
Courtney.
Time. We have fun. See ya.
About my presidential primary bill.
Let me talk about him now. Is Representative Keynes leaving?
I'll join in too.
That. Yeah, let's talk about him. Hey, can I just say that inside baseball, it was incredibly compelling when the head of the National Transportation Safety Board, she flew in from D.C. and personally spoke at the hearing. I mean, that was. I honestly do. I believe that was how that bill didn't have any lobbyists behind it. It was just Representative Norm Thurston from Provo, Utah, just doing his thing. And but I'm telling you, I think it was NTSB and the data they brought, and that she came, being the national head of that organization, came and spoke to that bill is what really was, I think, a game changer for why
I
that
bill. I saw lobbyists he had, the former president of the Senate and Art Brown and a few others.
Support, yeah. Well, yeah, true.
He had some big-time lobbyists that were just voluntary.
Well, a couple things.
They didn't lobby me.
No, I never heard of them.
Alcohol's always a debate, and Utah gets a rap. I can tell you personally, I have a living testimony that you can get a drink in Utah anytime you want.
Hey, Frank, let me just say one other thing. With the .05, I don't think that this is going to hurt tourism because the narrative, I believe, is when you come to Utah for vacation, you're going to be safer on our roads because people are going to be thinking twice and three times before they get behind the wheel when they've been drinking. And so I think you're going to find a safer place. And I think that's actually going to attract people to come.
Whether you agree with the president or not, he's giving you some advice. Save your money and buy stock in Uber in 2019.
Absolutely. Do that.
Let's take one more question. Christian?
Hi, again. So I know that in our state we spend so much time worrying about small businesses and how they're going to be impacted with the legislation that we make up on the Hill. So don't you think with bills like the Zion Moat and the Zion Curtain, where they have to make physical changes to their business, even if it's a small area, that that's really going to impact those businesses negatively?
So if you have the Zion Curtain and you like it, the bill did address that, you can keep it. You can keep to whatever structure you have if that works better. Again, I think that net, not requiring the businesses to build, so we're talking about the new restaurants that would come online, not requiring that structure, I just think it affords more floor space and advantage to have that done away with. I think that hiding the dispensing and storage, when you talk about data, again, that was a bill that I ran. It was the bill we ran to do away with the private club category of liquor licenses, because no one understood what a private club is. A public establishment that people from out of state couldn't get their head around. So we got rid of that private club, and we made some other changes in that bill. And one of them was these in statute structures where you would hide the storage and dispensing of drinks, or you conceal it. That was a compromise. And why Chili's, the national, and this is a larger business, to your point about how it impacts small business, but certainty in the statute of what they could expect. There was a real gray area in this whole topic where DABC would come in and inspect and start being creative in its interpretation. And so it was almost chaos. So we tried to get something that was at least uniform in its application. And we thought that would be a help to all. And then getting rid of the private club designation, we felt back when we did the bill in 2009, was a benefit. And I think getting rid of that hiding of that dispensing on the whole, as the bill was passed, is better than what we had before. So I think it helps small business that way.
I voted for the bill because I thought it was better than the current law. But I was thinking, and some of us were commenting in the back row, what would happen if the federal government had told us that we had to do these things and this is how we had to regulate our small businesses? People would be up in arms about it. As someone who's been raised working in a small business, I can see it from the perspective of these small restaurants. I've worked in small restaurants my entire life, and I think it's frustrating to them when they have to build certain things just to create the wall, the moat, whatever they need to be in Utah. I know that the national chains have some concerns. Suddenly they have to come up with a new design just to be in Utah. And then back to, does it make any difference in terms of reducing drinking? If that's the goal, if it's to keep kids from drinking, I'm still waiting for the data.
Anything on that, President?
I think it's been well said.
Before we close out, a couple of things. This doesn't get highlighted, but I just find it fascinating. There are some things that this legislature did, and it got a little bit of media attention, but you had the indigent defense, the rape kit, the suicide prevention, things that really help people in need. And phenomenal. You guys, without batting an eye, took care of a lot of that.
There were some really good bills and a lot of election law bills that came up this year, some that were really concerning to me. In the end, we were able to pass one that I was particularly happy about. I don't know how many of you had to wait in lines to vote for the president in the caucus last March 22nd. It's kind of a problem, to say the least.
Mostly in Salt Lake County, right?
And all over we had problems. 53% fewer people voted than they had when we'd had a primary just that time before in 2008 when we had a big presidential primary. This year we made a change and we said we are going to fund a presidential primary so that people can have early voting. The disabled can have parking. We can have professionals running the elections. That makes a big difference. And it may be small, but I think in the scheme of things, it really helps democracy.
Can I say that I love, we're public servants. And I think that, as was mentioned, we represent different districts. So we have kind of different constituencies that send us to the Capitol. But I do think there is this common thread of sticking up for the little guy. Mm-hmm. I really do. And what was an interesting contrast for me is that I ran from as the speaker, which I don't run very many bills or any bills really, particularly ones that are policy related. There might be a resolution or something that is kind of a feel good, but you don't usually run policy. But I ran, and the president ran in the Senate, the resolution asking the president to rescind the Bears Ears Monument. And so that got a lot of attention. There's a lot of debate about that. And I was also involved in the homeless issue. But I'll tell you, the core belief for me, as I went down there after the Bears Ears Monument was designated, I went down to Monticello. And I stood outside the San Juan County Courthouse on the main street of Monticello. And I listened to the people that are down there that felt really encroached on. They felt like their community, the place that they live, the land that they actually feel that they are good stewards of and love, they felt a heavy hand, and they felt it come from afar, and they were upset. And this was a diverse group. When they say that the Navajo tribes supported Bears Ears except for one, it's the one that lives there that didn't support it. What I heard from those people in Monticello sounded exactly, almost verbatim, with the frustrations I heard from people that lived near Simpson Avenue and in Sugar House. And they felt the heavy hand of their city government or making decisions about the area they lived in, and they felt encroached upon, and they felt that they didn't have a voice, and they were upset. And those emotions and what I was hearing, even though the politics and the people that were upset about each of those probably cut from very different political cloths, it is the little guy trying to be heard. It is someone that wants to be, to know that, you know, they have a voice. It's the same thing. And so I think that was an interesting observation. I saw that and I felt like I was coming from the same place on both of those issues. And I think that's something that I think we all share from both sides of the aisle, is that looking out for the little guy.
Anything you would add, Patrice, President?
You know, I actually was so pleasantly surprised over the last few years to see how this has become such a bipartisan issue, helping people who need help, the homeless particularly. I think it's been something we've all worked together on. I hope there are more issues like that. For many years, Democrats kind of felt like we were working on that without the help of those on the other side of the aisle, and I'm thrilled. I hope that will be true in the future when we're looking at, when I think of the little guy, I think of that person going into teaching that doesn't have a mentor, that doesn't have the support, that doesn't have the salary they need to make ends meet. I think of the other public servants that we need to help, and there are so many out there. There are a lot of these issues that we can really come together on, and I think that's important.
Amen.
Before we close, a couple things I'd like to add. Number one, I have a long list of clients, but I'm proud to represent the media and the newspapers and television stations who oftentimes criticize and critique these people on the panel. It's our job up there to defend open government, freedom of speech, especially in regards to a lot of things. This doesn't get a lot of attention, but there were a number of bills this year where there were attempts by different agencies, mostly local governments, not the state, to restrict GRAMA or free speech, and they were all stopped by the legislature without a question. And so on behalf of that, I want to thank you for that. You were great that way. For those of you who interned, you had a great experience. You may disagree with the decisions, but the Utah State Legislature is a phenomenal institution. It's a blizzard. You know, all the things are happening. At the end of the day, eventually you see the snowman, you see the igloo, and everything comes together. And it's a phenomenal thing that happens. And I'm proud to have served in it as a lobbyist. I'm proud to participate in it. And you may disagree with it, but you can be proud that you have an institution that's so open. You can go on a website and see every element of bills that are happening. You can participate. You can go up there. You can testify in a committee hearing. It's a phenomenal demonstration that democracy works. And so thank you for coming and participating in our panel discussion today. Thank you, panelists.
Thank you. How come you got Red Bull and we just got water?
I made a stop right now.
Well, wrapping up a fascinating discussion about recent changes to Utah's alcohol laws this past legislative session. And unfortunately, we need to wrap the show up here because of time, but there's still more to be heard. And you can hear this entire full-length panel discussion recorded last Friday on March 10th on our website or on the podcast version of this show. This program was made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund. I'm Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.